Hey, it's a local spotlight show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton, and with me today, my guest, former chief, Tom Wolfel. Great to have you in studio.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Now, I told you have to put your radio voice on.
Okay. Let's speak up a little bit.
No. You were in, I don't know, probably a year ago. I mean, a man with your knowledge and wisdom and experience, I mean, I probably should have you in here at least once a week.
Are you talking, who are you talking about?
No, you've been... Gosh, I didn't really realize it to just a few minutes ago when we were talking. You're a Calhouner. You're a Hooner. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So what's your roots?
Well, my mom, her maiden name was Narup. She lived in Brussels, right? There was a house just before you get to the Catholic cemetery in town, two-story house. And she was there, her mom
in
and dad.
Batchtown?
Oh, no, in Brussels. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
no,
she
was
in Brussels. And my dad was from Batchtown.
Okay.
And they lived out in the country. And my dad went to the service during World War II. And while he was gone, his parents and the rest of the family, of course, moved to Jerseyville. So Uncle Al, Uncle Richard, Uncle Ronnie, Aunt Rosemary, they all lived here in town. But my dad, when he got out of the service, went to Alton. He had an apprenticeship down there. So he's the only one of that family that never lived in Jerseyville.
How about your mom? So they met in Calhoun?
They met in Calhoun.
And got, when they were young?
Went to school together.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he went off to service and...
Okay. And what was I going to ask you? You grew up. You were born there. And did you go to school there in Calhoun?
No. I was born in Alton.
Okay.
Because my dad went there '46, I guess, when he got out.
Did you ever go back there? You got some roots?
Yeah. Oh, there used to be times when I'd go up there and spend a week with my grandparents, and the rest of the town would applaud when I'd go home.
What can you say about Calhoun?
You know, I'll tell you, not so much when I was younger, but after I lost my wife, Teresa, I had a bad weekend one time. I was kind of having the blues. So I'm going to go over to Calhoun Drive. So I was driving around. I went from Batchtown. I was headed down towards Brussels on the back way. And I came up over a hill, and it was in the fall, and I could see three ridges out in front of me. I was sitting on one, and over the road, out through the woods, there were three ridges. And I sat there in the middle of the road, and I thought, now I know why they call this the Kingdom. It's a beautiful place.
It is.
Yeah. And people are good and friendly. I mean, you need to have some Calhoun roots to really kind of fit in there. But once they know who you are, it's a good deal.
Yeah. And I think all the small communities are a little bit like that. I kind of felt that.
Not snobbish or exclusive, but we don't know you. We've got to feel you out a little bit.
When I went, my dad moved there when I was about three,
mm-hmm.
okay? And ended up being five kids. And I was always jealous as I grew up going to school there.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys had cousins, you know? I mean, everybody there had all these cousins around.
Yes.
And my cousins, you know, like were in Alton or, you know, Quincy or something, they were spread out. I'm like, man, I wish I had some cousins around here. You know, and I always, to this day, my cousins are special to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, with them, you know, they had so many, they kind of, I think, might even took them for granted. I don't know, but Calhoun's a special place.
You know, to follow up on that, my friend Pam and I were over in Calhoun last year, and there was one of the church festivals going on. So we pulled in, and we were in Meppen.
Sure.
And Dad was born in Meppen. And I sat there and I looked at the crowd, didn't see anybody I recognized. I told Pam, I said, I don't know them, but I've got cousins over there. The first table we went to, they were raffling off a quilt. Got to talking to them. These two girls were tapins. My grandmother was a tapin. Yeah. I met cousins at the first table I came to.
Yeah. Well, when I go over there after being, I've been living in Jersey for 40 years, but I go back and forth, you know, and my family's still, I still got family over there. Mm-hmm. But I get a kick out of, I'll go someplace, you know, maybe it's a wedding, graduation, some sort of event, or maybe just in a tavern or a restaurant or whatever. And I'll see some young person, you know, and I look at them and I go, you a Ballman? Yeah. Or, you know, are you a Miller? Are you, or whatever, you know, you can just like recognize where they come from. You know, the genetics are so cool.
Yeah, I get the Wolfle thing every now and again. Yeah, Wolfle. But my youngest sister, not youngest, but the next youngest sister who we lost, she was out one time and this guy ran into her and he goes, you look like a Narup. And that's never happened. But this guy picked her out to be a Narup.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it is. Great place, Calvin.
Well, I got a few things to ask you about. One is, I notice on the top of your head, all right, you've got a little instrument, a round instrument. Or is it? No.
Right. Yeah. Right on the side.
Is that for your hearing, or what is that?
Yeah, that's this is a cochlear implant, and I suffered what was called sudden deafness, and just walking down the street, and boom. Just quit. It
kind of felt like,
this was about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And it felt like when you go up in an airplane, when you're first taking off, you get that pressure. Uh-huh. That's what it felt like. So I thought I'd clear up the next morning or whatever. And I kept trying to pop my ear, you know, and that didn't work. So the next morning I called emergency room and they said, get in here right away. The nurse that answered the phone knew exactly what it was. So, I was in Missouri, so I was shot over to Missouri Baptist, and the emergency room girl knew exactly what it was, put me in a room and called the doctor, and he said, high dose of steroids, and have him in the office in the morning. And so they tried to get it back with injections of steroids and stuff. It didn't work, which didn't hurt because they numb it. But so I was totally deaf in this ear, and that was my good ear because I've always worn a hearing aid on the other, you know, the other ear. So eventually I found out about this process of cochlear implant, and I was of the age when I have Medicare, and Medicare will not pay for a hearing aid, but they'll pay for a cochlear implant. They consider it a prosthesis.
Ah.
So it's a surgery where they go in underneath your skin. They don't open your skull or anything like that, but it goes under the skin.
Yeah.
There's a magnet and a transmitter, and it transmits, this is a receiver, and it transmits the sound in through the skin into the receiver, the transmitter inside. And there's a little bitty wire that goes into your ear, and the cochlea in your ear is just tiny. It's just a little bitty. But they take this wire and they feed it, and it looks like a seashell, kind of conch shell looking thing. And they feed this little wire up into your cochlea, and that tiny wire has 23 electrodes on it. And they're tuned and coordinated with a computer that talks to this thing. And they regulate it and they test you to where they get the very best hearing. And there it is. So at nighttime, I take it off.
Oh, okay.
Because it's just a little magnet in there.
Oh, there's a magnet under
your skin.
There's
a magnet underneath my skin.
Okay.
And I go to church with the Van Alstalls over here, and they have a daughter who unfortunately was deaf. And I had seen her in church with her little cochlear implants, and I never realized what it was until I had to get one. And so not long ago, she was walking out of church, and I reached up and tapped her on the shoulder, and she turned around and looked at me, and I went like that, and she got a big grin on her face. Now, I'm not the only one around that's got one of those things.
That's amazing.
Well, it works out real well at Halloween, you know, get a doorbell ringing, kids will me at the door, and I'll go, yeah, they're here now. What do you want me to do with them? They don't know what's going on.
Oh, shoot. That is funny. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, it
that's
is.
It's amazing. Yeah. So one thing we were, hey, one if you're thing, just joining us.
If I can add, anybody who ever wants any information about this or the process, they feel free to reach out to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been to people's houses and talked to them about it. I mean, they're curious.
Yeah. Hey, and I've got Tom Wiffle with me, if you just joined us. And we're talking about a number of things. It's always good to have Tom in for a visit. Tom, since you've been around, I mean, can I ask how old you are?
I am 76.
76. Yeah, I know.
Never thought I'd make that.
And you're only 6 years old. No, you're 8 years older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's scary.
That's scary. No, but you were police chief for many years. 20 years?
20 years.
Yeah. And then you've been on a lot of different boards over the years for the city and for, you know, different organizations. Just one thing I'd like to ask you, for people that are in an organization, young people, I like to educate them. What is some advice you have for people that want to move up the ladder in whatever company or organization they're working in?
Mm-hmm.
What's your suggestions?
Well, education, whatever field it is that you're interested in, educate yourself as much as you can, read, go to school. Kids that used to come into the office and say, I want to be a police officer, what road should I take? I would say either go to college or else go to the military and get into law enforcement in the military police, which is the course I took. And that background, especially military, because military changes an individual so much. You grow up so quickly.
Yeah.
And become self-sufficient, and you learn to make decisions. And that that's a good course for somebody who wants to get into law enforcement. So that can apply to whatever field
sure.
you want to go into, radio, whatever kind of field you...
Yeah, anything.
Yeah. yeah. So education is big. Lou Holtz, late Lou Holtz, coached Notre Dame for years, had three things he lived by. He said, always do your very best.
Mm-hmm.
Always treat people right. And always do what's right. And always treat people in a way that they know you care. You know, and in my years when I was manager, I certainly failed at that a lot of times. You know, I wish I could go back and do some of those things over. But anytime an organization sees that you're applying, they're going to recognize you. Anybody can just go with the flow. You know, a lot of employees just go with the flow. But that guy who comes in a little early, stays a little late, make sure that he's done right, that what he's doing is the best he can do, that's the guy who stands out, and he'll move up or she'll move up.
You know, one thing that I recognize now, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just recognize it a lot more now than I did, you know, years ago, you know. For example, I went into Walmart, and I always park back where they work on the cars, you know, the mechanic,
sure.
and I go that shortcut.
That's the way I go. Yeah, I do too.
I was going through there. And for the first time ever, you know, how long have I been going doing that? You know, years, you know, 20 years.
Uh-huh.
I had this young man behind the counter working it. He greets me, right? I mean, greets me like, hey, how you doing? You know, what are you doing today? What are you looking for? And I'm like going, wow, that's never happened. So I go in, I get whatever I want, and I come back out, and I have to tell him, I go, hey, I just want to let you know, your greeting me is very impressional to me. And, you know, you keep doing that. You keep working like that. You're going to go up the ladder somewhere.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You're going to work your way up.
It shows you care about the organization. You know, that you can tell that guy wants the best for you as a customer, but also he's putting his best foot forward for Walmart, which doesn't always happen.
Okay. How about in the leadership role? Because you were in the leadership for a long time. I know you didn't know everything when you started.
No.
All right. Well, what are some keys there to be successful in the leadership role?
Pay attention to the ones who do. Pay attention to the ones who, you know,
the ones that do what?
Pay attention to your leaders, to your teachers. Okay. Let your leaders be teachers. Pick out what's right in what they do and try and emulate that in your leadership role as you progress. Try and use that thing. I had a sergeant when I was in the Air Force after I got back from Vietnam, Sergeant Klein. He was probably the best leader I ever had. The guy could get you to do anything. And it was empathy. He cared about you. He always did what was right. You could tell his decisions weren't, you know, spur of the moment, although in police work sometimes that's got to happen. But he always cared about you, and he was well-educated in what he was doing. So paying attention to him helped me as I became a sergeant. And, you know, there's another thing is when you have an opportunity to progress, if there's a test, an interview, or even a move from one company to the next, if you have an opportunity to progress, take that opportunity. Don't wait for something else. If you see, okay, this is a step in my career, take that step. Whether it's education, go back to school, whatever.
Okay. Yeah, always look to take the step up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of a thing called the Peter Principle?
Yes, I have.
Okay. How does, you know, of course, Peter Principle is you can advance so far and then you get to a plateau where you really maybe fail,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
Know your limitations. Know your limitations, which is something that it's hard to admit, but, you know, you sometimes in retrospect, you know, you're looking back at things over your life, you go, that was wrong, you know. But if you understand and admit to yourself, I need somebody else to do that because that guy's got that skill, let that guy do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you there,
100%. Yeah. Don't try it.
I don't want to do everything.
Don't try and do everything. That's exactly right. You can't do everything right.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky enough to have somebody, and if you're in a supervisory management position and you've got somebody you know can do that, that's your go-to guy.
Yeah.
And that, on the reverse of that, that guy has to take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I'm going to advance that one.
Yeah. I like that. Hey, one thing I want, I know you're been on a lot of different organizations and for the community, but we got to talk about, which is coming up, the National Memorial of Military Ascent that's going on in Grafton. Mm-hmm. They got the big, rock wall.
Yes.
And what's your role in that?
Well, I'm blessed to be one of the members of the board of directors for the memorial. Of all the things I've been in, other than church, this is the most rewarding for me. This is going to be that's my go-to right there. It is that's our founders being a founding member. You can have your name etched in a wall at the memorial as a donation that goes along with it. And
you can have your name or you have to be in the service.
Your own name. You can have like the Chris Lorton family.
Okay.
Put there. You can have WJBM. You could have...
if your father served in the service, you want to be there forever.
Right.
It's going to be there forever.
Right. I could have Private George Wolfel put on there for my father.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to. Or the George Wolfel family. So we're finishing up, pray God, we're finishing up with phase one, and that's when the statues of the Rangers going up the bluff.
And they're made of bronze, right?
Made of bronze, ropes and ladders, and it's going to be an amazing sight. And it represents the Rangers' assault on Pointe du Hoc in France on D-Day.
Yeah.
And the unveiling will be June 6th of 26, so it's 6-6 at 26, which is D-Day. And so we'll have the unveiling in the morning and a ceremony there where we actually open it up for the public, for the statues and that part of the monument. That's phase one. And phase two will be a museum, and it will have an immersion room where you go in and you experience what it would have been like coming in on one of the landing craft or something mm-hmm. like that on D-Day.
Oh, that's going to be pretty neat.
Right, it is. And there's some other interactive stuff, and it's going to be a great museum. So that'll be phase two. So there's a lot to be done, a lot going on, but we've got a leader down here to talk about leadership, Mayor Mike Morrow, retired full colonel.
Sure.
Ranger. And he's the kind of guy who, if you pay attention to him, you'll figure out leadership.
Yeah.
He's
he gets leader. Things done, yeah. doesn't he?
There's a documentary being filmed about the whole process from planning to the statues themselves were modeled off of actual people. And the way they did this company, Carolina Braun, who were making the statues, came up and they have a laser. What used to be, they would have to make a mold right. of each person and then cast that and then make the statue off the casting.
Yeah.
Would take a year. Now they have this laser and they go all the way around the model, and there's soldiers, you know, these guys are dressed up in different positions,
okay.
have to hold those positions because that's what it's going to be on the wall.
Yeah.
And they use this laser and go all the way around them, put it automatically goes into a computer,
mm-hmm.
and from that they can make the casting. It's a 6-month process as opposed to 1 year for each statue. And when they got the models, there's 12 statues. When they got the soldiers to pose for that, I think two of them were actual Rangers from St. Louis. They have a reenactment outfit over there.
Uh-huh.
But they were looking for young, stout young men.
Sure.
And so I said, I got this grandson. And so Nick Wolfel's going to be one of those statues.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, you know. You know, Nick Wolfel, I used to coach him in basketball at St. Francis, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. You just remember, the little guy, now he's got his own family.
He's got his own family, got three boys, and they are just great.
I bet they're blonde-headed.
They are. They're towheads, yeah. They're all blonde, all good-looking kids, all smart. And Courtney's got two up in just south of Chicago, a boy and a girl, beautiful. But Nick is with the police department. And he's also serves with the Metro East SWAT team.
And, isn't that something?
Yeah,
He's done well.
It's a volunteer thing that, you know, each organization department can have a person go to. It's called ILEAS. And so he volunteered and was lucky enough to get in, and he works hard at it. He works hard up here, so very proud of him.
Hey, back to the June 6th mm-hmm. memorial. Mm-hmm. I know they've got... how do people get tickets? The actual festivities, no cost. I mean, it's free.
Yeah, the opening, yeah.
But they have a dinner dance.
Dinner dance that evening at the loading dock. It's going to have two different orchestras come in and play. It's kind of a 40s theme to go along with the opening of the memorial. And you can get those in Grafton. You can call Grafton City Hall. And ask for Brittany, who does everything the colonel doesn't do, Brittany does. And she can get you tickets.
All right.
You score it away.
Well, Tom Wolfel, it was a pleasure to have you in studio today. And got to have you back. We got so much stuff to talk about.
Anytime.
So I'll have you back.
Anytime.
All right.
Appreciate
thanks for
you
coming in.
Me.
And thanks so much for what you've done for the community. And continue to do for our community.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.